வல்லவாகிரி ஒரு தாரி யசுரானந்தனா பிரஜஜனரங்கனா யசுரானந்தனா பிரஜஜனரங்கனா யாமுனதிரமணசாரி யமுனதீரவனசாரி ஜயராதவ குஞ்சவிஹாரி ஜயராதவ குஞ்சவிஹாரி ஜய கோபிஜனவல்லவாகிரிவருதாரி ஜய கோபிஜனவல்லவாகிரிவருதாரி யசுரானந்தனா பிரஜஜனரங்கனா யசுரானந்தனா பிரஜஜனரங்கனா யமுனதீரவனசாரி யமுனதீரவனசாரி ஜயோராதவ குஞ்சவிஹாரி ஜயோராதவ குஞ்சவிஹாரி ஜய ஓம் விஷ்ணுபால் பரமஹம்ச பரிவ்ராஜ் காச்சாரிய ஸ்ரோத்தர ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீமரே ஸ்ரீ பக்தி வேதாந்த சுவாமி பிரபுபாத் கீ ஜய. கிரந்தராஜ் ஸ்ரீமத் பாகவதம் கீ ஜய். நிதாய கௌர பிரேமானந்தே ஹரி ஹரி போ. சமவேத பக்த விருந்த கீ ஜய. ஆகவே ஸ்ரீ அசம்பல தேவதி, ஆகவே ஸ்ரீ அசம்பல தேவதி, ஆகவே ஸ்ரீ அசம்பல தேவதி, ஆகவே ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீ குரு கௌரம். ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஸ்ரீமத் பாகவதம் கேண்டோ 10 சாப்டர் 74 தி டெலிவரன்ஸ் ஆஃப் சிசுபால் டெக்ஸ்ட் 31 through 34. Today we're going to hear from சிசுபால். I was just reading last night in தப்பசந்தர்ப. One purport, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's purports are based on Baladeva Vidyabhushana's commentary to that work, Tapasandarbha. And he says at the end of one purport how everything about the Bhagavatam, there's nothing wasted, there's nothing extraneous, there's nothing. Everything fits there exactly, and it's meant to take us step by step up to Ashraya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even the blasphemous words of Shishupal are important for bringing us up to the highest level. I was thinking it's a little strange to be chanting together Shishupal's blasphemy. We'll chant the last two verses today are the ones that have the purport, and they're commented on by Sridhar Swami, and it's one of these purports where he reanalyzes the speech of Shishupal and makes it glorification of Krishna rather than blasphemy. So we'll start, we'll chant together 31 and 32, and then we'll chant responsively 33, and then together 34. So we'll start, we can chant this together. 31. Isho duratyaya kala iti satya vati shrutihi pridhanam apiyad buddhir balavakyer vibhidyate. Shishupal said, the statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy. 32. Yuyam patra vidam shrishtha mamandhavam balabhashitam sadasas pataya sarve krishna yatsam matorhane. O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore, you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. So text 33, the word meanings, tapaha, austerity, vidya, Vedic knowledge, vrata, severe vows, dharan, who maintain, jnana, by spiritual understanding, vidvatsta, eradicated, kalmashan, whose impurities, Parama, topmost, Rishin, sages, Brahma, to the absolute truth. Nishtan, dedicated, Lokapalai, by the rulers of the planetary systems, Cha and Pujitan, worshipped. Tapo vidya vrata dharan. Jnana vidvastha kalmashan paramarshin brahmanishtal lokapalaischa pujitan tapo vidya vrata dharan jnana vidvastha kalmashan Paramarshin Brahmanishtal Lokapalaischa Pujitan Tapo Vidya Vrata Dharan Jnana Vidvastha Kalmashan Paramarshin Brahmanishtal Lokapalaischa Pujitan. Lokapalaischa Pujitan. Tapo vidya vrata dharan jnana vidvastha kalmashan paramarshin brahmanishtal lokapalaischa pujitan. Vidyavratadharam Jnana Vidvastakamasan Puramarshim Brahmanishta Lokapalaisya Pujitam.
Ladies.
Tapo Vidya Vratadharam Jnana Vidvastakamasan Paramarshim Brahmanishta Lokapalaisya Pujitam.
So text 34 we can chant together.
Sadaspati natikramya gopala kulapansanaha yatakaka purudasham saparyam katam arhati.
How can you pass over the most exalted members of this assembly, topmost sages dedicated to the absolute truth, endowed with powers of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe? How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred Purudasha rice cake? Purport. The great commentator Sridhar Swami has analyzed Shishupal's words as follows. The term Gopala means not only cowherd, but also protector of the Vedas and the earth. Similarly, Kula Pangshana has a double meaning. Shishupal intended it to mean the disgrace of his family, which is its meaning when divided as above. But the word may also be analyzed as Kula Pam Angshana, giving a totally different meaning. Kula Pam indicates those who prattle with crooked words contrary to the Vedas, and Angshana, derived from the verb Angsayati, means destroyer. In other words, he was praising Lord Krishna as he who vanquishes all misguided and frivolous speculations about the absolute truth. Similarly, although Shishupal wanted to compare Lord Krishna to a crow with the words yatha kaka, these words may also be divided as yatha akaka. In that case, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word kaka is a combination of ka and aka, which indicate material happiness and misery. Thus, Lord Krishna is akaka in the sense that he is beyond all material misery and happiness, being on the pure transcendental platform. Finally, Shishupal was right in saying that Lord Krishna does not deserve merely the Purudasha rice cake offered to the lesser demigods as a substitute for the heavenly beverage Soma. In fact, Lord Krishna deserves to receive everything that we possess, since he is the ultimate proprietor of everything, including ourselves. Thus, we should give Lord Krishna our life and soul, not merely a ritualistic offering of rice cakes. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. One of the names of Krishna is, it's in the Vedas, the list of different characters of the Supreme Brahman. Krishna's not mentioned in the context, but the Supreme Brahman, one of his characteristics is Nirvadya, which means faultless. So I've seen one commentary when the Acharya says that means you can't say anything bad about Krishna. So even if the words come out and they're meant to be bad, they can't be bad because he's faultless. So here we see the great Acharya Sridhar Swami is reinterpreting the words, or giving the correct interpretation of the words. Recently, I've been studying the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You may know that he gives five different interpretations, very long purport. So he takes each of the words and he looks at them in different ways. And he says, well, this word not only means this, but it can also mean this. So he starts off with a real kind of philosophical understanding of what the first verse of the Bhagavatam means. But the fifth one is about Radha Krishna and Madhurya Rasa and so on. So he goes step by step with the higher, more esoteric and devotional understandings of what this first word, the first verse means. And it's all legitimate. He quotes the Bhagavatam and he quotes the Vedas to support everything that he says. So the Bhagavatam verses can have different meanings. Even the Bhagavad Gita can be read in different ways, on different levels of understanding. And because when Krishna speaks, well, he has great power. He has inconceivable power. His words have inconceivable power. So they can convey many levels of meaning simultaneously. So here, there are four different things that Shishupal said that were reinterpreted by Sridhar Swami. First, I just want to mention one thing about Sridhar. He may be a bit of a vague personality for many of us. We know that Lord Chaitanya, he accepted him as the authority, so this is important for us. In fact, it may have been quite a revelation that he was accepted as authority because he comes in a Mayavad Sampradaya, he comes in Shankar Sampradaya, and the impersonalists, they claim him as one of their own. He's ours. So, but the Vaishnavas say, no, he's ours. Lord Chaitanya says, no, he's a Vaishnava. So we accept what he says. Now what Sridhar Swami did was, because he was a Vaishnava, he was actually trying to influence the impersonalists who were naturally reading what he was writing. So he's here and there in his books, there are some of his commentaries can be taken in an impersonal way. So he's throwing them, some little scraps to the impersonalists so they can still think he's one of ours. But actually what he's doing is he's trying to convert them to Vaishnavism by his commentary. And over again in many of his chapters in the Bhagavatam, his commentary, he ends the chapter with a prayer glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially Lord Nrsingadeva, who seems to be his Ishta Deva. So Sridhar Swami is an authority, so it's important to he's important to us in that sense, even though he appears as a Mayavadi, according to some. So there are four different things that were said about Krishna that Shishupal said about Krishna. First of all, I always like to think about people's names. I was saying, I wonder what the significance of Shishupal's name is. Because Shishu means child, and Paul, of course, means a protector. So there may be some story behind that. There are so many stories, but anyway, that's the literal meaning of his word, protector of children. Or it could also mean, I suppose, a child who's protected. So maybe in that sense, he was, of course, protected by Krishna. Krishna could have killed him right from the beginning, but let him go on for many years, blaspheming him until he finally finished him off. So the first thing that Sridhar Swami says about Krishna is that he is the protector of the Vedas and the earth. So naturally, Krishna's protector of the Vedas because Vedas cha sarve aham eva vedyo, the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. In fact, the Vedas are Krishna. They come from Krishna. This is described in the Bhagavatam and also in the original Vedas and the Shruti from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes the Vedic knowledge. It coexists. This is one point that Gopi Pranadan Prabhu likes to make. It's not that the Vedas were created. They're eternal. Just as we're eternal and God is eternal, Vedic knowledge is also eternal. It coexists eternally with God. And of course, the Vedas are meant for human society. Extremely important for human society. The whole reason for human life is to make spiritual advancement, and the Vedas are there for that. Therefore, Krishna comes repeatedly to give the Vedic knowledge. And as he says in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So I come when there's dharma shiglani, because dharma and Veda, they go together. Dharma is what we're supposed to do in our human form of life. That's dharma. So Veda pranihito dharma. These are the words of the Yamadutas in the pastime of Ajamil. The Vishnu, the Yamadutas, they were stopped by the Vishnu Dutas. They were going to take a jamil. So the Vishnu Dutas challenged them, you're representatives of Yamaraj, so you're supposed to know religion. So what is religion? Explain to us what religion is. What is dharma? So this was their beginning of their answer. Veda pranihito dharma. What the Vedas say is dharma. Yadharmas tadviparya. And what is not explained in the Vedas, that's adharma. Veda narayana sakshat. Swayambhuriti shushtuma. The Vedas are directly Lord Narayan. Now they're directly Lord Narayan because they're the words of Narayan. So Narayan and his words, they're no different. So Veda Narayana Saksha, they're directly manifest. Lord Narayan is directly manifest through the words of the Vedas. We know especially Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, not only Narayan, the expansion of Krishna, but Lord Krishna himself. Brahma Samhitam, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, is present fully in the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then they say, Swayambhuriti Shushruma. They are self-manifest, as Narayan is self-manifest. And Iti Shushruma means this we have heard from authority. This is very important. We find this over and over again in the Bhagavatam. I was thinking, today we say, they say, you want to say something, you say, well, they say that so-and-so. They say that, and we say, sometimes you challenge, well, who says? So when in the Vedic context, when people say, they mean the authorities say. And it's actually a fact when they say. It doesn't mean just any Joe on the street says. It means the authority says. They say, the authorities, like these great sages that are here present in this assembly. So when they say, now here specifically, when they say Shushuma, we have heard, that means they have heard from their particular authority, who's Yamaraj. Of course, Yamaraj is called Dharmaraj. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, so he's certainly a great authority. So when they say this, that what is in the Vedas, that's Dharma, then we can take their word for it because they're repeating the words of Yamaraj, that great authority. So Krishna is the protector of the Vedas. It's very important for him. And we see repeatedly Ishanukata, one of the ten subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam is Ishanukata, which means kata about Isha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his incarnations. One of the first questions that the sages at Naimisharanya ask is, tell us about the incarnations of the Lord. So throughout the Bhagavatam, we have so many incarnations. There are many chapters that are dedicated just to avatars of the Lord. So what happens when the Lord comes? We see repeatedly that not only does he perform some pastime, but he generally speaks. Even Matsya avatar speaks to Satyavrata. He speaks to him Vedic knowledge. Almost inevitably, we see there is some talk given. And what is the talk? Of course, it's about Vedic culture. It's about Vedic knowledge. It's about Dharma. So all of the avatars, they come with this dual purpose of performing Leela, and also part of their Leela is to instruct human society. So this, again, this is how they're showing, this is how Lord Krishna and his various avatars, he protects the Vedas. Now it also says this, because the idea was, the word, as you may remember from the beginning of the purport, Shishupal was criticizing Krishna by calling him Gopal. You're just a cowherd boy. He's just a cowherd boy. How can you make him the lead person of this assembly? His position, by the way, I was thinking, the idea of this Raja Suya sacrifice, it's not because Krishna is the Raja, it's because Yudhisthira is being made the Raja. But what Krishna is, what's happening in the context of Krishna is that he's being made the guest of honor. That's basically the idea. He's the guest of honor. He gets the Agra Puja. He's the first to be worshipped. Just like if we have some festival and we invite some big shot VIP to come, and that person is the guest of honor. So the idea is this person is very important and we're going to give him some special honor here. And we give him a special reception, let him say a few words. So he's the guest of honor. He's the most exalted person here. So we do that with VIPs to make them feel good. You're the guest of honor. So that's the idea here. That Krishna is the guest of honor, the most exalted person here. So, but he's saying, well, how can this ordinary cowherd boy, Gopal, be the most exalted person here. Now, in the two verses today, the one that we chanted was very nice, actually, because Shishupal was glorifying these other sages, saying, look at them, they have all these great qualifications. So that's true, actually, they do have great qualifications. But Krishna, he's not just an ordinary cowherd boy, but he's all Gopala. Pala means protector. So not only protector of Go as cow, but also protector of the earth and protector of the Vedas. So I spoke about the Vedas. Now the earth, of course, Krishna also protects the earth. We know that Bhumi Devi, at the beginning of the 10th canto, she says, I'm being trampled by all these heavy forces, military forces. It's a great weight. Bhubhara, it says, Kunti Devi says in her prayers to Krishna that you came to remove the burden of the earth. Bhubhara, she was feeling the weight of all these military forces with their feet trampling on her, stomping on her. So she didn't like this. So she wanted them removed. So this is a specific, literal example of the Lord removing the burden of the earth. So that's one of the things he does. He protects the earth. Now, even in the pastime, we may think of Prithu. What about Prithu Maharaj? He was ready to shoot an arrow and kill the earth. He pulled out his bow and arrow and aimed it at the earth. Now, of course, we know as the pastime unfolds that they reconcile their disagreements. And there's a point later in this pastime, which covers quite a few chapters, where it says that Prithu Maharaj, of course, his very name, Prithu, is related to the word Prithivi, which means also the earth. So he's the protector of the earth in his very name. And it says that he accepted her just like his daughter, ultimately. He became just like his daughter. So he had that affection for her and that mood of protecting her. And he also fulfilled her request. She asked him, please make the earth level, so this will help me grow vegetation to feed the population. So he responded to that request. So that was another way he protected her, by fulfilling her request. Now we also know that the earth, or the Vedas, I forget to mention this, of course, in Matsya Avatar, he also protected the Vedas in the beginning of creation. What happened was Lord Brahma, he went to sleep. He was tired and he went to sleep, and he, as he was breathing, the Vedas escaped from his mouth. And then Hayagriva, there's a couple of different, of course, this happens every day, but in one particular pastime, Hayagriva Avatar killed the demon that had stolen the Vedas, or maybe the demons, Madhu and Kaitav. And then he returned the Vedas to Lord Brahma. This all happened when Brahma was sleeping. Then he woke up and he didn't really know what had happened because he had lost the Vedas and then gotten them back because Hayagriva had taken care of everything while he was sleeping. So the second thing that Shishupal mentions here, he says, reinterpreting the words, says, he who vanquishes all misguided and frivolous speculations about the nature of truth. So again, just like when he protects the Vedas, Lord Krishna protects the Vedas, or in his different avatars, he protects the Vedas, so he also protects the truth. He destroys spurious philosophical arguments and so-called theologies and philosophies by speaking the absolute truth in his different incarnations. In fact, he does this the Acharyas mention, and the Vedas also mention in different places, that the Lord reveals the absolute truth by speaking himself, Vedic knowledge, and by his appearance in this world. There's one phrase, I forget what it is, Prabhupada uses the term imaginative iconography, something like that. How Krishna destroys the imaginative iconography of the absolute truth. In other words, just like in the Bible, we have the golden calf, they created this. So that's why, of course, the Jews and Christians are so against graven images, because out of speculation they created this God and they were worshiping this God. So this is imaginative iconography. So Krishna comes to destroy imaginative iconography by showing, no, here I am. This is what God looks like. This is what the Supreme Personality of God, the Absolute. You don't have to speculate. Here I am. This is what I look like. This charming form of Shyama Sundar. So he comes himself at different times, once in the day of Brahma, of course, as Krishna, then and so many other avatars, different forms of the Lord are revealed. So he says, no, this, if you want to meditate on the form of the Lord, this is actually what the Lord, what God looks like. And then finally, in the hearts of the devotees, by their own realizations, That's how Krishna protects Sat, the absolute truth. In the Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami in one place says that the supreme pramana is the direct realizations of the devotees' pratyaksha. When they see Krishna within their heart, that's the supreme pramana. That everything else, in a sense, is theoretical. I always think this way myself. I have no realization whatsoever. All I have is all this theoretical knowledge, and I have the commentaries of the acharyas and their testimonies. But that testimony, to me, carries a lot of weight, because they're saying that, no, this knowledge is not just theoretical. We testify that we've seen Krishna. We can tell you what Krishna looks like. Krishna has spoken to us, just like Narada Muni, as he told Vyasadeva his life story. And Krishna actually appeared to me. Then he disappeared, but this is what he told me, and so on. So this realization where the devotees have direct darshan of Krishna, Jiva Goswami calls this the supreme pramana. So especially, as you might say, in one sense, the Vedas are the supreme because everything is based on that. But in another sense, we can see how it's real, the real absolute truth, because people have actually experienced it and spoken their realization. So that makes it very powerful when they repeat what they have seen for our benefit. So the third thing that is said about Krishna here in the reinterpretation, he is beyond all material misery and happiness, being on the pure transcendental platform. So this idea that God is Brahman, that the form of the Lord is Brahman, this is very, very important in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, again, of Jiva Goswami. You know, in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami establishes Srimad Bhagavatam as our primary evidence. And then from there, he establishes everything out. So especially uses the Bhagavatam this is his second Sandarbha, the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Bhagavat here means about Bhagavan. That Bhagavan, really his point is that Brahman is Bhagavan, or Bhagavan is Brahman. That Brahman is not impersonal. So all these things in the Vedas about Brahman that you impersonalists want to interpret in some impersonal way, no, they're actually about a person. And that's what Vyasadeva does also in Vedanta Sutra. You can say that's pretty much what the Vedanta Sutra is about. It's about this same point. So many of the famous verses that we know that Prabhupada quotes from the Vedanta Sutra, they have to do with this, counteracting the impersonalist interpretation of the Upanishads. Vedanta means the Upanishads, actually. Another word for Upanishads is Vedanta, because it means the end of the Vedas. So what is the end of the Vedas? It's the philosophy of the Vedas. What is their tatparya? Another word is tatparya. Tatparya means purport, you can say. What is the purport of the Vedas? What is it trying to say? So what it's trying to say is explained in the Upanishads. So they're called Vedanta. And what Vyasadeva wrote is called Vedanta Sutras. So what he has done is taken little snippets of the Vedas that people who study the Vedas know what those snippets mean, and he's explained what their actual tatparya of them is, what they actually mean. So repeatedly, he's saying, no, you impersonalists don't understand what this means. It actually means glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari Sarvatra Giyate, in the Hari Vansha, it said, the Vedas ultimately are all about glorification of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from beginning to end. Adavante. From beginning to end, the Vedas are about Hari Sarvatra Giyate. It's all about glorification of Lord Hari. So one of the points that Jiva Goswami works very hard to establish in the Bhagavad Sandarbha is that the form of Krishna is beyond transcendence. Actually, we're hearing this morning, it was very interesting, wasn't it? In the reading after Mangalarti, that Prabhupada said, there's physical, mental, intellectual, transcendental, and spiritual. Usually we think transcendental and spiritual, it's the same thing. But Prabhupada gave this twist to it. So you can say transcendental maybe is Brahman realization, and spiritual realization means Paramatma, and especially Bhagavan realization. You can say that's really when you're spiritual. Otherwise, Aruya Krishna Param Padam Tada, you can fall down from that being transcendental, you can fall down from there. But if you're actually spiritual, if you get that mukti, which is what? Hitvanyata rupam swarupena vivastiti, that liberation is spiritual. Then that's transcendence. So Krishna is, that's real transcendence. That's the Krishna's position is there. He can never fall down. He's not a product of someone's imagination. The impersonalists, they have all these different ways of coming up to try to explain variety in this world, including the variety of Ishvara. Because they actually admit, yes, there is Ishvara. There's Purusha and Prakriti. So they have to figure out some way to explain how this happens. So they have their different theories, like, oh, it's a reflection of Brahman. And Jiva Goswami repeated, said, no, this doesn't make any sense. You can't say that, because if you say that, then Brahman has, then you're attributing duality to Brahman, even though that's not what you're trying to say. In fact, there's an analogy that's given, and it's called the return to the customs house. This is how it's phrased. It's one of those things, if you're a Vedic scholar, you can say, this is like the return to the customs house. So the idea of this saying is that you've been arguing and arguing and arguing. What happens is there's some thieves, they're trying to sneak around. They're smugglers, so they're trying to bypass the customs. So they're wandering around all night trying to get sneak through the woods or whatever. But what happens in the morning, they've been wandering and wandering, and then there they are at the morning. The light comes up, and there they are, right at the customs house. So the idea, if you say you're back at the customs house, is saying you've been arguing and arguing and arguing, but you actually haven't proven anything. You're back where you started. You still haven't defeated the point that we make, that the Supreme Absolute Truth contains inconceivable variety. The Absolute Truth is one and different simultaneously. Of course, this is with Jiva Goswami hammers on over and over and over again, that his qualities are identical to him. And with these qualities and these energies, that's how he's able to create this world and so on. So don't think that Ishvara is part of this, is Sattvaguna, transformation of Sattvaguna, whatever. No, he's transcendence itself. So inadvertently, this is also a point that Shishupal is saying about Krishna. He's transcendence. He's beyond happiness and distress, which are the main characteristics of this material world, that duality. He's beyond all of that. So finally, he says this curious thing about the Puro Dushak rice cakes. He deserves, I was going to look it up, but just like we have hyperbole, so hyperbole means exaggeration. So it's used in rhetoric, and it's in oratory, and it's also, Prabhupada used it a lot of exaggeration to make his points. But there's also, well, it's called hyperbole, so there's another word, I forget what it is, which is the opposite, which is understatement. So sometimes you kind of downplay something for effect. So that's, you might see that's what Shishupal is doing here when he's saying Krishna's not authorized to eat the Purudasha rice cake. So the idea is that, that's the way the words are taken, that, well, why should he want to eat the Purudasha rice cake? That's before the lesser demigod, because there are different levels of everywhere, there's hierarchy. So even among the demigods, they're the big shots, and then they're those who are lower down. So the big shots get to drink the somarasa. This is a big thing. In my last class, last week, I mentioned how the Ashwini Kumars really wanted to drink the somarasa, but they weren't qualified. But ultimately, because of the blessings of Chavana Rishi, they were able to do that. So that was a big thing for them. They got promoted to those who can drink the somarasa. So usually, those who can't drink the somarasa, they have to drink these. They have to eat these rice cakes. Whatever they are, I don't know, maybe they're just dry rice baked into a cake. I don't know what they taste like. But they get to eat these. So Krishna's not qualified to eating these rice cakes. Well, of course not. He's qualified to eat everything. He's qualified for everything. This is, of course, a kind of offering. Recently I was reading Ridhananda Maharaj. I don't know if you know, he's come out with a Bhagavad Gita. It's quite nice. I really like it. He's trying to, of course, preach to a Western audience. So he's taken all of the different concepts in the Bhagavad Gita, like karma and a lot of Sanskrit words, and elaborated on them in the first part of the book. And then he gives a very literal translation of the Bhagavad Gita. So the word he translates for yajna, which we usually in Prabhupada has translated as sacrifice, he's translated as offering. So offering. This is what life is actually meant for, offering. So we offer things to God. So sacrifice, of course, it means basically the same thing, but maybe people they react to the idea of sacrifice. What? Sacrifice? Some archaic word. But offering, yes, offer something. So this is in the sacrifice, the demigods are usually offered either the soma beverage or these rice cakes. So to offer Krishna only rice cakes, well, that's insignificant. Everything should be offered to Krishna. Our very selves, our heart and soul should be offered to Krishna. So again, so this is, we can say that as Sridhar Swami is interpreting this, this is really what Shishupal is saying, that everything should be offered to Krishna. So what to speak of this Agra Puja, the first worship here, he should be offered everything that we have contact with or we have control over. We should offer that to Krishna for his glorification. All right, so I'll stop here. I'll just read these last two verses, translation. How can you pass over the most exalted members of the assembly, topmost sages dedicated to the absolute truth, endowed with powers of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge, and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe? Maybe Shishupal got some benefit by this glorification of the sages. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred Puru Dasha rice cake? Any questions, comments? Shishupal?
Thank you, Nagarashvu. Did you say that Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadeva is attempting to explain the person behind the more impersonal statements of the Upanishad?
Yeah, well, that's one of his major tasks. What he's doing, of course, is, well, he's trying to give the purport to the Vedas, which as a Vaishnava himself, he sees as personal. So, yes, even in places where there are impersonal... Now, one point that Vyasadeva makes, and Jiva Goswami also makes repeatedly, is that the problem that the impersonalists have is that the Upanishads contain impersonal and personal statements about the absolute truth. So there are definitely statements that, at least on the face of it, seem to be impersonal. But there are personal statements. So the impersonalists, what they do, they don't try to reconcile the two statements. They throw out half, basically. Or what they do is they take the personal statements and they try to interpret them in an impersonal way, which was Lord Chaitanya's criticism of Shankaracharya. Lord Chaitanya said that you're saying that Vyasadeva made a mistake in his Vedanta Sutra by taking this personal statements about the absolute truth and saying this is personalism, and you're interpreting them in an impersonal way. So as Vyasadeva is definitely trying to establish personalism as the ultimate Vedanta or the Siddhanta, but there are impersonal statements. Of course, now what Vaishnavas do, they can say that, well, ultimately, Brahman is part of Krishna. So this is also about Krishna because the oneness is also there. So we can reconcile all these statements because of this atintya beda beda tattva. Any glorification of Krishna in an impersonal way, the absolute Brahman in an impersonal way, we can say, yes, that's true, because God has both his impersonal and his impersonal aspects. So you're also glorifying Krishna when you glorify the impersonal Brahman. But to say that that's the supreme, that's where the problem comes in. And there are so many logical problems that don't work, as Jiva Goswami points out over and over. Jiva Goswami was such an amazing personality. In 1 year, he mastered all these six darshans. 1 year in Benares. And you can imagine, he heard a lot of impersonal philosophy. He was studying under a Vaishnava, but in Benares, naturally, he heard all the arguments, impersonalists, and he, of course, had studied Shankaracharya's Shariraka Bhashya, which he also quotes, by the way. In some places, he quotes, he says, even your Acharya says this, to support some point he's making. He says, even Shankaracharya, your guru, says this point. So that implies such and such, which is a personal viewpoint of the absolute truth. So it's so amazing, Jiva Goswami's intelligence is just incredible. But naturally, of course, yes, he's trying to even take the impersonalists, especially by this tactic of saying that, yes, you can glorify impersonalism, but that's because Brahman is part of the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is ultimately personal. It's one of his energies. It's one of his qualities that are non-different from him. So a lot of nice philosophy is there. Bhagavat. The Shat Sundarbhas, I've been wanting to mention, I don't know if people are very clear about what the Sundarbhas are. The six Sundarbhas taken together, Shat Sundarbha, they're called Bhagavat Sundarbha. And the word Bhagavat, with a long A like that, means in relation to Bhagavan, in relation to Bhagavatam. Basically, the six Sundarbhas are a commentary on the Bhagavatam. So they're called Bhagavat Sundarbha. And the second Sundarbha is called Bhagavat Sundarbha, with a short A. And no T at the end, or no A at the end, Bhagavat Sundarbha. That means in relation to Bhagavan. So he establishes Bhagavan in the Bhagavat Sundarbha, but the six Sundarbhas are about Bhagavat Sundarbha. It's a commentary, ultimately, about Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Jiva Goswami also wrote a verse-by-verse commentary on the Bhagavatam called Krama Sundarbha. And many of Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavatam, Gopi Pranadan Prabhu says, are taken from Jiva Goswami. Even though he doesn't always credit him, many of them are taken directly from Jiva Goswami, his Krama Sundarbha. So an amazing personality, Jiva Goswami. He wrote so many. I think he wrote something like 400,000 verses. Yes, actually, this is mentioned directly by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jiva Goswami wrote 400,000 verses. Of course, he wrote also, I don't know how he counts the verses because he wrote in prose. Maybe he counts a sentence as a verse, but he definitely wrote a lot. And he was also managing. He was the chief. He was kind of in control. He was managing all the assets of the Goswamis. Managed all their books, their library. He managed that. And he was dealing with politicians, the Muslims. He was pacifying the Muslims so they wouldn't destroy temples in Vrindavan and everything. His people created so much havoc. You know, just came in and destroyed and murdered them. Of course, this happens throughout history everywhere. But it happened in Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami was dealing with that. Plus, he was writing. I get one little distraction. I can't think. You know, but he was doing his deep, deep philosophy. He was meditating on, while at the same time dealing in, you know, ordinary affairs of this world. Sanatan Goswami also. We hear about Sanatan. He would go village to village and people just loved him. And they would say, you know, they would come to him with personal problems. Oh, our son is a rascal, you know, he's not chanting his rounds. So he would say, I'll send him to me. I'll talk to him. So he was doing that kind of thing while at the same time writing Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I mean, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, just imagine what a work that is. Astounding. Yes, Rasatmaka Mataji.
Yes, I wanted to ask, what is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita? Uttara is inquiring from her son Parikshit. You know, tell me what you heard. But it doesn't seem like a commentary on the Bhagavatam or a summary even.
Well, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita actually is explained there. I suppose now that again, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu has taken Sanatana Goswami's own commentary on the work and basically presented it. The commentary is basically Sanatana Goswami's own commentary. So it's explained there that this work existed previously. Now, one thing about the Puranas and many of these Vedic literatures, they exist eternally. And they manifest, just as Krishna, he's hidden, he's uppercut generally, but sometimes he manifests himself. So he does this through the hearts of his pure devotees. His pure devotees are able to see these things, you can say, read these books, and you know, present them to us. The example that Gopi Pranadana Prabhu gives is like a transmitter, just like we have these cell towers everywhere now. So what happens, the signal is coming from somewhere and it's bouncing off, it's being retransmitted, it's being captured by this cell tower and then rebroadcast. So that's what the seers do. They have the receivers that we don't have. We don't get that channel, but they're able to get that channel and they're able to get that information and pass it on to us. So Sanatana Goswami is on that level where he's not making this up. He's retransmitting some eternal shabda, eternal transcendental sound vibration. So, and of course, the story, as you read the book, you'll see that these are all, it's the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's presented in a narrative form that's very nice to read. Very wonderful book. And then, of course, Rupa Goswami, he took the same information and condensed it down even more in Lagu. Brihad means great, and Lagu means, well, actually means heavy. Mahabharata actually means heavy, very heavy. So, and then Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you can say, is heavy or great Bhagavatam, the explanation of the Bhagavatam. And Lagu Bhagavatamrita means light or small. So, and that's sort of, he's sort of condensed the teachings of Brihad Bhagavatamrita and just verse by verse, without the story, just given the information, you can say, extracted out the lessons of Brihad Bhagavatamrita and put it in a kind of outline form, you can say. Rupa. Rupa wrote Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Taking his guru, because Sanatana is his guru, even though they're brothers, Sanatana is his older brother and his guru. He respects him as his guru. So he's taken his guru's work and explained it through the more concise Lagu Bhagavatamrita. So the Goswamis, we're so indebted to the Goswamis, what they've given us. Prabhupada told us we should study their works. In fact, it's said that in order to get the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, you have to get the mercy of the Goswamis. And through Nityananda's mercy, you get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's how we realize Radha Krishna and our relationship with them. So they're so important to us. Now, of course, Prabhupada presented, this is the one point that the devotees who have studied the Goswami's writings very carefully, especially devotees who can read the original Sanskrit, they say, we see that Prabhupada gave us all this information. It's all there in Prabhupada's books and his purports. But the amazing thing that Prabhupada did, which is practically inconceivable, I've mentioned this before, how it's easier to write a commentary on the Vedanta, for example, in Sanskrit. It's easier to do it because it's the same language. You don't have to explain your terms. But to take those terms and try to put them into English, the language of the Mlechas, that's really a big challenge, to take those, that terminology. And it's full of it. We know ourselves, we have our whole own lexicon, our own dictionary. Sometimes we talk to people, they can't figure out what we're talking about because we have so much of our own jargon. So, but the Prabhupada was able to take this knowledge and translate it into, you know, the language of the Mlechas and Yavanas. It's an amazing, amazing feat. And it's the same philosophy. It's all there. All the points of Jiva Goswami Sundaras are present in Srila Prabhupada's books. Of course, it's nice to read them as he presented them. But it's a bit of a challenge, too. I'll tell you, I'm editing the Bhagavad Sundarva, and sometimes my head is spinning. It's, whoa. It's very interesting, though, because you see some of the verses that are famous to us. Just like this verse, I'll just give one example. Anandamaya Vyasa. So everyone has heard this. Anandamaya Vyasa. So Prabhupada would usually use that phrase to say we're all ananda by constitution, just as God is anandamaya. But actually, the context of this verse is it's a commentary. He's resolving some debate about anandamaya, pranamaya, vijnanamaya. What is it? I skipped one of them. Manomaya, yes, vijnanamaya, and then anandamaya. So the maya, actually, the word is, it's a short a maya. So this in the Taittiriya Upanishad, there's this whole analogy about these different mayas in the form of a bird. It's conceptualized as a bird and the different parts of the bird's body. And each of the mayas is, the one that comes next becomes the soul of that one. And then the next one becomes the soul of that one. There's a whole complicated discussion. Then at the end it says that Brahman is the tail. So there's this big debate where the Mayavadis say that means that, you know, this represents the absolute truth, and the absolute truth is Brahman, impersonal Brahman. So to solve this whole debate, Vyasadev says, Anandamaya Vyasa, right? End of the argument. Anandamaya Vyasa. And what this means literally is, Abhyasa means repetition. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, we hear about yoga, yoga abhyasa yoga yuktena, right? Practice. So it means repetition. So that what Vyasadeva is saying is, no, this is Brahman here is the supreme Brahman, because of the way the word Ananda has been used repeatedly in this context of this discussion to refer to the supreme personality of Godhead repeatedly. So you can't take this part, this use of the word Anandamaya, and say it's impersonal when it's been repeatedly used to refer to the supreme personality of Godhead. So that's what this Anandamaya Vyasat is all about. So the whole Vedanta Sutra is like this. Vyasadeva, because there are these debates that go on, and those who are in that atmosphere, they know these things. So he just has to mention, just like if you say Dwasuparna, so some of you may know what that's about, the two parrots. So that's also a very famous Upanishadic verse. So if you're studying the Upanishads, you know immediately what Vyasadeva is talking about when he says Dwasuparna, the two birds on the tree. Because the impersonalists also interpret that. We say, well, right away, obviously it means there's duality. There's two birds, there's a soul and the super soul. So they have some impersonal way. So he'll take that kind of thing, and I don't know if he does this one specifically, but that's the idea. He'll just say Dwasuparna, and then he'll give the resolution to the whole argument in a few words. So that's why we can't understand the Vedanta Sutra ourselves, because we don't know what he's talking about when he quotes a couple of words. But our Jiva Goswami, or Baladev Vidyabhushan, of course, he's our acharya who wrote our commentary, Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary, on the Vedanta Sutras. He understood what Vyasadeva was talking about when he used these short sutras. So we have a lot of people say, you know, bhakti is probably what I always go against this. Bhakti is for sentimentalists, you know, they don't want to study philosophy. Well, if you want philosophy, it's definitely there. We definitely have our Siddhanta. Jiva Goswami is our Siddhanta Acharya. We have different acharyas. So he's our Siddhanta Acharya. He gave us the Siddhanta. And he was Lord Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They wanted him to do that specifically because of his transcendental genius. All right, I think we'll stop here. It's 9:00. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.